Welcome back. You're watching StockWatch with me, Bright Khumalo, tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Jean-Pierre Fister from Protea Capital Management and Dricus Kornbrink from Capicraft. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. For now, it looks like it's just you and I, JP. So let me open by asking you the question of, you know, we've seen markets have been sort of, languished, for the past, 2 weeks. We saw some green shoots yesterday in the US. Markets closed up in the green. Local markets obviously also followed suit. Where did we close this evening and how are we looking in the US?
So I see a lot of red on the screen, Bright. So, the S&P is down 1.8% as we talk. So it has been a negative day. The all share did end up for the day. So there were some positive moves up from big shares like Glencore and MTN, as well as Sasol, for instance, did not name just three. So the local market did well in the green, global markets in the red. And this is a very important week for global markets. A lot of very big companies are coming out with results. Microsoft, for instance, today. Tomorrow, we have a company like Facebook. So some big names in the US specifically that are reporting this week, and that will set the tone. And what we've seen so far in these quarterly results is some big moves, some big disappointments. Just think of Netflix, call it roughly a week or so ago, that had a big smack. And Bill Ackman sold his shares even after the smack. So interesting times in the U.S. market with quarterly results.
Yeah, definitely the rug was pulled there on Netflix and obviously its shareholders. Like you're saying, Bill Ackman, it's very unfortunate to see something like that happen. I think it's safe to jump into our questions. Alex Frey on Twitter says, does the panel have a view on Argent Industrials? PE of 4.5, debt-to-equity ratio of 0.5, five-year net income CAGR of 16%. Do you follow Argent, JP?
Yes, so I really like it. It's a very solid small-cap company, and the metrics that you mentioned are all trailing, so it does mean that it's a bit backward-looking. But even if you look forward, the expectation is that Argent will keep on growing its earnings at an above-average rate, and it's not in the price. It is quite cheap on a PE basis and a price-to-book basis. It used to be a very South African-focused company focused on the steel industry and the beneficiation of steel, but they've changed a lot since then. It's now more almost a UK-focused company with a broader portfolio of smaller companies within Argent. Very good capital allocation the last few years. So I actually like it quite a lot. I like Argent at this price.
Oh, fantastic. I think Alex is going to like that answer. Good evening, Dricus. A question here we have from Tsego. It says, is RMI and Mondi worth a buy right now? It's a very specific question.
Yeah, RMI is in the middle of unbundling, so you receive three different shares from that. I'm looking forward to see what happens with some of the share prices afterwards. But I've had my eye on one of the subsidiaries. Typically, I like to go for what you might call spin-offs. Yes. And while it's not technically a spin-off, I do think it's already quite cheap. And that's Momentum Metropolitan Holdings. And sits at about a 7-8% odd dividend yield. And I'm sure that the spin-off, the shares that you're going to get from RMI, some of those shareholders are going to sell it. And they'll, most of the shareholders in RMI like the other assets more. I'm not sure they like Metropolitan Momentum Holdings. And I think they'll sell them. And that might be a buying opportunity.
Yes.
For something that's already quite cheap. So I'm looking at that. Mondi, I think it's discounted some of the Russian exposure already. I do think it plays into the inflationary period that we're in at the moment. It's inflation edged to a certain extent, but it does most of its business in Europe, and Europe is, in what I regard, already in a very deep recession.
Yes. Talking about the unbundling of RMI, we did receive yesterday, I think, the shares of Discovery and Momentum Metropolitan, and I had to check checked the base costs. Everything looked good, so are we happy there? And obviously, what's going to remain of RMI is going to be the insurance business. We'll be watching that very closely. And obviously, the numbers that they report are going to be a more truer reflection of how insurance is performing on itself, on its own. JP, Njabulo Njivas says, view on U.S. earnings, especially energy stocks like ExxonMobil and Ford. I don't know if Ford is a, you know, energy stock, but yes.
Yeah, let's call it an energy-related stock or an energy derivative stock, seeing that you put the energy in the gas tank, you know, for the Ford vehicles. And yes, very soon you're going to plug in more and more Fords with your hybrid or models, even the total EV model.
Yes, yes.
Correct. So, look, so more broadly, I think you mentioned energy. That's the one sector that is doing extremely well when it comes to delivering very high earnings growth at the moment. And it all depends on your measurement period, how wonderful these companies are doing. And the shorter your period, the more wonderful they look. And the longer your period, the more it's a fascinating picture that comes together, and that is that energy companies have been dogs for a long time. And there's a theory called the dogs of the Dow, and that basically says if you consistently buy the shares which are in the doldrums, you can actually outperform because the expectations in the share price is too low. And that's what has happened to the energy sector. We've very quickly gone from very low expectations to very positive expectations because of the high oil price. And markets have been a bit slow to catch on that very significant change in expectations. So broadly, like the energy sector, I haven't looked at ExxonMobil and Ford in too much detail, but broadly, because of like the sector, I can't say anything negative about the two. The one thing I would say about Ford is it is a different factor. The input cost, the supply chain disruptions are not good for vehicle companies. So if I had to choose between the two, I would definitely choose ExxonMobil.
Okay, fantastic. I know you and Carl Icahn are laughing to the bank now. You know, he's always been bullish on energy stocks. Trickus, do you have any further comments on energy stocks? I know you like the space as well.
Yeah, energy stocks are too large part of our portfolio. We got a bit of a hiding last night. I see they're up this evening, so it feels a bit better. But things like this, you know, it doesn't go up in a straight line. I think there's a structural undersupply. There's been a lack of capex spending, capital expenditure over the last few years. So, I don't want to be in the seat of Jerome Powell and his colleagues or for the ECB or the Bank of Japan or any central bank for that matter, because they're going to tighten monetary policy and it's not going to produce extra barrels of oil. It's not going to produce extra volumes through gas pipelines. It's not going to produce semiconductors. That's where the supply problems are. And we invested there. It's going to be a wild ride for me. I think most of the easy money has been made in the likes of ExxonMobil. And we still own some ExxonMobil. It's not the biggest share in our portfolios.
Yeah.
But we do own other energy producers, which are much cheaper. I would say they're practically pricing in a $60, $70 oil environment.
Yes.
So a lot of margin of safety. Well, I think Exxon is a bit more expensive relative to other energy companies.
Yeah, okay, fantastic. Thank you very much for that. We have a question from Milan. It says, do you guys think Tencent WeChat should benefit a lot from their China COVID lockdown? And number two, when will South African investors realize that 50% of Tencent's discount in process value actually means a 100% upside? That Koos Becker, who has 5 years to go, will ensure that he will kick management or get the Tencent shares in the hands of individual Tencent / Naspers shareholders. I think he meant process Naspers shareholders. JP?
From your lips to God's ears, right?
Oh, so, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Not me.
Yeah, well, yes, both of you and me, because I think we all three agree. It's going to be an interesting 5 years. I think there could be a bit of butt-kicking, if I put it that way, if things don't start happening. And you're correct. If something is trading at a 50% discount, it implies a 100% upside. The maths is proven on that front. So I'm hopeful that things can improve there. I don't think the lockdown is particularly positive for WeChat because the Chinese already use Weixin, the local app there, for just about everything. So just because you're sitting at home and you're forced to sit at home in some of those cities doesn't mean you're going to do anything more. You would have done almost everything in the you know, in any case. So it's marginal at best. Maybe you are sitting and playing more computer games inside rather than commuting, but that's marginal. So net-net, I don't think it's positive. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for economic growth in China. And hopefully these lockdowns are lifted soon, and that will actually be positive also for sentiment, which could boost Tencent.
Okay, fantastic. And Trikus, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think something like Naspers is due for a big bounce. It's just unfortunate that they're in an environment where tech shares are getting sold off heavily. Eh? Yes. So it's still a tech share. So that is the problem. I see that from a technical point of view, Naspers is actually, you know, just looking at the Rand-based price, at least, it's holding some of its strength. It's holding on serious support lines. A bounce here is not unexpected. I would just want one thing to say on NAV is that within that NAV, there's capital gains tax, obviously, that you have to encounter. There's all kinds of costs, fees, you know, that is unnecessary in a holding structure, which is not that much for something like Naspers. It's obviously much more, it's a bigger problem for a smaller company. But thirdly, some of that NAV within Prosus, at least, you know, there's a lot of e-commerce businesses that are valued at old valuations, and the market has changed in the last 6 months, and they should be valued lower the next reporting period. So those NAVs should come down a bit. It shouldn't change the investment case, though, but, you know, just your level of conviction on the trade.
We have a question here from Russell, who says, you know, he wants to know our thoughts on Truett, considering the fact that there's a, you know, a share repurchase program, which, you know, saw the shares tick up by 3%. And obviously management is backing themselves and their own prospects here. What does it mean for long-term investors there? I'll start with you, Trikus.
Yeah, I do like share repurchases if it's in a, you know, a relative, if they're repurchasing a share that's, you know, on the cheap side, firstly, and secondly, there's no other reinvestment possibilities, which in the economy that we have, you know, quite frankly, there isn't a lot. So I like that. And also it's more tax efficient to buy back shares rather than pay a dividend for which we're going to pay 20% dividend tax on. So I'd rather than buy back shares, you know, in the right circumstances, once again, then pay out a dividend or hoard that cash or, God forbid, you know, spend it on unnecessary store rollouts in an economy that's not growing.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be a wise way to allocate capital as, you know, a management team. So they must be onto something here. Your thoughts, JP?
Yeah, I broadly agree. I think Truers has got a very good capital allocation framework. And they've bought back an enormous amount of their shares over the years. If you go back, I don't have the number in front of me, but they've really bought back, I could be wrong, but it could be half of all their shares.
Wow.
If you go back a decade ago through all their share repurchases. I mean, already this year, they've bought back 7%. So they are very aggressive with share repurchases. And if you think about them compared with the other clothing retailers, yes, they did buy a struggling food retailer in the UK office. But thank goodness that was a big mistake, but smaller than the mistakes the other clothing retailers make. Maybe except Mr. Price. So let's call it the second smallest mistake. and that, therefore, I would say that Truers has at least not made any big mistakes in capital allocation, and buying back shares has been a good decision.
Yeah, but that share price has always just been a laggard behind literally every other retailer I know since 2010, which is, I don't know what that means. I honestly, something.
It just means that SA's discretionary income is not growing.
Yeah.
As easy as that. So that's unfortunately that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we have the same question from J.E. Jacobs, which is asking us about Centova. and, you know, comment on the impact of Russia, Ukraine. I think he asks us the same question every single day. I'm about to report him as spam now. We answer him tonight. If he doesn't watch this show, I'm reporting him as spam. Trickus?
Yeah, I have no idea. I think the results are due early in May. I'm looking forward to that. I think that they would have had a good period. But I just can't say that with any amount of conviction, because logistics or supply chains are so messed up at the moment. I don't know how that will affect anybody. I'm looking forward to what management is going to tell us. But I'm not. We own some Santova, but we're not holding on with a lot of conviction in this environment. Maybe it suits them, this environment. You know, yep. They've got some interesting software. Maybe they can arbitrage a lot of, you know, maybe it opens the, let's call it an arbitrage spread for them with regards to supply chains. But I don't know. I'm not close enough to management to tell you that.
Look, I think the argument, JP, was that they don't really hold any heavy duty sort of, you know, material or equipment, you know, PPE type of stuff. They just offer the service, like Trickus has alluded, you know, take an arbitrage on the spread using their software, obviously, which is broadly used not just in South Africa, but, you know, worldwide. And they shouldn't be affected too much by what's happening in China and in Russia, etc. Is that still the story, I guess?
I think so. I also have low conviction on Syntova. I would just say that to a large extent, it's a working capital business.
Yes.
And if they can just ensure, like they have been doing, but they might have tweaked the terms, they might have needed to tweak the terms, that they get the cash up front for freight forwarding and a lot of the services they offer, it means with all the problems in logistics, hopefully they can actually hold on to that cash for longer. But at the same time, not write much less business. And that's the trick, to do both, to hold on to the cash for longer, but at the same time, also have more revenue growth, because more revenue can come through the door. And it's difficult to do both. So I'm pretty sure they would have done one of the two. I think it's the holding on longer to cash while growing the revenue line might be a struggle, but I don't have high conviction.
Okay. So both don't have high conviction in this environment for something like a Santova. I hope J.E. Jacobs, you know, is listening to this show, otherwise I'm reporting him. This one is coming from the SMS line. Is it better to buy South African government bonds or unit trust? I think he's referring to corporate bonds. It's the first time we're receiving a question like this. Trickus, you're an equities guy. Bonds, do you ever look at that?
No, you know, it's bad for business, but one of the better things that a retail investor could do is go to rsaretailbonds.co.za and buy the inflation-linked bonds. I think it's inflation plus 3.5% for the 3-year or 5-year at the moment. That's a good deal. And if you think there's some chance that, you know, the SA government might default on some of its debt, you know, those are last in line. The last ones they are going to default on are the retail bonds, and the last retail bond they're going to default on are the inflation-linked ones. So I think those are one of the better deals for retail investors out there. And within the corporate space, there's actually a lot of, let's call it alpha, if you go outside of the listed markets. If you search for some private equity or hedge fund players that invest in the mid-tier market, you can get some nice double-digit and even prime-linked returns. So if you just do your homework there, you'll find some nice issuers.
Yeah, interesting. We have a question here about Sibanye. The person apparently is in the green finally with Sibanye, and, you know, it ebbs and flows, it goes up and down, and he's asking if he should sell some of his Sibanye shares. I mean, I don't know. The last time I checked the price in the last two trading days, Sibanye was going the wrong direction. I'm surprised he's still in the green. JP?
Well, they're going also with green metals. So that works quite nicely. So I still like Sibanye. I think of the you know, traditional, it was a gold company, then it's a platinum company. Now it's diversified between precious metals and a little bit of green. They are generating a lot of cash, and I don't think the share price has factored in the great amount of cash, at least in the short term, that they're going to generate. There's still a bit of a question mark over the long term, but in the short term, it looks quite attractive.
Attractive on a short-term basis. Drikus, do you think Sibanye is attractive?
Yeah, I think there's some margin of safety and in the valuation, especially with regards to short-term free cash flow. But Neil has a way of spending free cash flow, so we'll see what he does with that. There's two sides. The best side is that neon gas doesn't get exported from Ukraine. Semiconductors don't get, processed. There's some still inventory going around, but, you know, automobile production falls down the cliff, and so does the demand for BGMs. So that's the one side. That's the best side. That hasn't really played out yet. That's the demand side. Well, that's the demand side for BGMs, at least. The supply side is interesting because Sibanye also has a large palladium producer with Stillwater, and yes. Which is a fantastic mine. But and they compete with the Russians. And if for some reason we blockade, you know, the West blockades Russian export of palladium, you know, palladium or PGM prices will double for me easily. So it's like an option. You should view it as an option in your portfolio, not to go overweight because there is some risks. But the upside, I think, or let's call it, it is asymmetric. I think there's an asymmetric upset setup here. The upside is more than the downside.
Okay, fantastic. Now it's the moment of truth, Drikus. Your stock picks for the evening?
Yeah, I'll go with Kaap Agri. Kaap Agri just came out with a trading statement this afternoon, 15% odd headline earnings per share growth. It's what they signaled at the beginning of the year, the AGM. Last year, also double figures. It's a good environment for them. They're actually the cheapest retailer at the moment in the country. They're a retailer, basically, and they service, a certain market segment. And they're mostly a non-credit retailer, and they're trading at about a 4.78 price earnings ratio. You can't extrapolate, obviously, the current trading statement of R3.50 or thereabouts, because the second half of the year is generally a bit weaker. But still, let's put it on an 8 price earnings ratio. It's the cheapest retailer in SA, and they do most of their business in the Western Cape, which obviously is a nicer place to do business at the moment. And the agricultural space, which they serve, is looking quite rosy at the moment.
Yeah, they sort of missed the floods, you know, if you go up east in the coast. So that should be, you know, playing to their favor, because competition is going to be wiped out for a few couple of, you know, months as they rebuild there. JP, your stock pick for the evening?
My stock pick is Schibsted, which is listed in Norway.
Okay.
It has two main business lines, a traditional media business, mostly print, but then also a e-commerce business. And they've got directly e-commerce businesses in the Nordic countries, and also via a shelving in Adevinta, exposure to e-commerce businesses in Western Europe. I like the e-commerce business model, where you post goods or cars or jobs for sale, and you match with buyers, and the platform takes a fee. And Schibsted's share price has been decimated over the last 5 months or so. It's more than halved. So for the first time in 5 years, I actually picked it 5 years ago, I think Schibsted is now again at a price that is attractive, at roughly 200 Norwegian kroner.
Okay, fantastic. Schibsted and Kaap Agri, those are the picks this evening. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for pulling up to the show. Thanks to my guest, Jean-Pierre Fester from Protea Capital Management, and Drikus Kombrink from Capicraft. Stockwatch is back on Thursday. Have a good evening. Yes.